Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Call into us today for your flu and COVID vaccines at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So it is 1 year ago this week since Liz Truss resigned as Prime Minister of the UK after just 49 days in the job. Let's take a look back at some of those moments.
Good afternoon. I have just accepted Her Majesty the Queen's kind invitation to form a new government.
Mr. Speaker, what our budget has delivered is security for families for the next two winters. It's made sure that we're going to see higher economic growth.
And that chaos, I mean, it goes right to the Prime Minister, to Downing Street. We don't have a government. I mean, the lettuce might as well be running the country.
This is an absolute disgrace. As a Tory MP of 17 years who's never been a minister, I think it's a shambles and a disgrace.
I've got the list here. 45p tax cut, gone. Corporation tax cut, gone. 20p tax cut, gone. 2 year energy freeze, gone. Economic credibility, gone. They're all gone. So why is she still here?
Mr. Speaker, I am a fighter and not a quitter.
I recognise, though, I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
Yeah, it was actually 44 days. I gave her five bonus days there when I said it was 49. But George Parker, political editor of the Financial Times, 44 highly dramatic days. And we're going to go right back now to when it all started. Boris Johnson was toast. She was running against the current Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, back then to become leader. So take us back to that point.
Yes, well, Boris Johnson announced he was resigning in July 2022. He'd been hit by a series of scandals, including Partygate. He was forced out. And then there then followed the sort of leadership contest through the whole summer between Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak. Liz Truss quickly established herself as the darling of the party faithful with her sort of Thatcherite message of lower taxes and scrapping all regulations. Generally, as a rule of thumb, the more right-wing you are, the more likely you are to win a Tory leadership contest. And duly, she became Prime Minister in September last year.
So she came in looking to cut taxes and borrowing, and that was very appealing to the party faithful at that time.
Well, she was interested in cutting taxes, but not, of course, cutting borrowing, because the flaw in her plan was she decided to announce £45 billion of tax cuts, mm-hmm. intended to get the economy growing, but she was going to fund these tax cuts by additional borrowing.
Yes, and that's what I mean, in favour of cutting taxes and borrowing, increasing borrowing.
She increased borrowing, and that was the slight flaw in the plan. And, you know, she would argue that she was walking in the footsteps of Margaret Thatcher and the idea of doing big sort of aggressive tax cuts, particularly on corporation tax and cutting the taxes of very wealthy as well to encourage entrepreneurialism. The thing she forgot was that Margaret Thatcher actually put up taxes initially to get the public finances back on a solid footing before she started cutting taxes. And Liz Truss did it the other way around with disastrous consequences.
So just like Thatcher, apart from one very important part of the Thatcher jigsaw puzzle. So then enter Kwasi Kwarteng, her first chancellor. They were old friends and ideological soulmates.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they went back a long way. They sort of hung around right-wing think tanks in London, like the Institute of Economic Affairs, which became very influential during those brief weeks that she was in charge. And they sort of drunk the Kool-Aid about the idea that we needed to have a smaller state, we needed to cut taxes, and that was the way to jolt Britain out of its sort of stagnant growth phase. And you know, everyone agrees that growth's required, but they administered sort of electric shock treatments. He was her chancellor. And they announced very quickly an energy package, which cost a lot of money to support people through the energy crisis. And then the Queen died. You're probably about to come on to that, Claire.
Oh, yes. Well,
that then the Queen died, and that then created a sort of two-week hiatus in British politics, which gave Kwasi Kwarteng and Liz Truss 2 weeks to come up with even crazy ideas to put into their mini budget a few weeks later.
So would you say that the death of the Queen actually extended Liz Truss's run as Prime Minister?
Yes, I mean, you mentioned she was, I think she was in office for 44 days. Oh, sorry, she resigned after 44 days, and then there were 5 days taken to appoint a successor, Rishi Sunak. But I think, you know, that those 49 days in total could have been 21 days or so if the Queen hadn't died, because basically there was 2 weeks when nothing happened in British politics. There was a period of mourning, of course. Mm-hmm. But in those 2 weeks, all sorts of right-wing ideas were poured into Kwasi Kwarteng's budget. And they thought, well, look, if we're borrowing 40 billion quid, why don't we borrow another 5 billion and get rid of the top rate of income tax? Yeah, good idea. So all sorts of things were poured in at the last moment without any proper forecasts, of course. That was another problem, that they did away with the normal convention of producing official forecasts to go alongside the mini budget. And the markets took one look at it and thought they'd gone completely mad and, of course, lost the plot completely.
Yeah, and no forecasts and also no polling. She didn't agree with finding out what people think.
No, that was very much part of her shtick as being a conviction politician who did things which weren't necessarily popular in the short term, but which would pay dividends in the longer term, a bit like Margaret Thatcher did with some of her reforms back in the 1980s. So that was her yardstick. So, yes, no forecasts, no polling, a complete shot in the dark. And we saw what happened next.
The markets just turned on her when that budget came out.
Yeah, they thought it was economically incredible, and they were worried, of course, and we're seeing this now, that, you know, the government runs up additional unfunded borrowing when interest rates are going up, you end up in a pretty dire situation. And just the last few months, the cost of servicing Britain's debt has risen by £20 billion. You know, we're borrowing at 100% of our GDP at the moment, so adding to that scared the markets a lot. But it wasn't just they thought it was economically illiterate; they just thought they didn't quite think that she had a political grip either. They couldn't understand how, in the middle of a cost of living crisis, anyone could think it was a good idea politically to give a massive tax cut to people earning more than £150,000 a year.
She seemed to understand that, though, as well, to a certain extent, because I read in your own writing on this that she said, I only have 2 years, I need to move really quickly. So she accepted that this was going to be a short run.
She did, yeah. Move fast and break things, I suppose, is the old Silicon Valley mantra, and that's what she intended to do. And it wasn't just on the tax side. She thought the whole British economy had become very sclerotic. There were all sorts of barriers to growth, red tape. In particular, she took aim at the planning system, which is very restrictive in the UK, as you know. And she sort of did things, for example, like doing away with old EU directives which protected bird habitats. And, you know, she might have thought that was a good idea to get people building houses on bird habitats. But what quickly happened was that the whole of Middle England, people who belong to mass membership organisations like the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds or the National Trust, suddenly turned on her. So it wasn't just the markets. It was the bedrock of Conservative support thinking, what on earth are you doing?
Mm-hmm. And then her Chancellor, Kwasi Kwarteng, goes on the BBC after the budget, after the markets had reacted, and basically says, well, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, that really speaks because it was almost like, we've done some quite bold stuff here, but we're going to go even further. And indeed, they had in mind, and they toyed with the idea of actually going even further on the tax cuts in the mini budget. But they had in mind another set of tax cuts designed to help people earning more than £100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. You know, so the markets looked at that and thought, well, how much further are they going to go here without producing a roadmap of what they're doing, any forecasts or any route out of it?
So how did it all end?
Well, it all ended up in a disaster, basically, as you know. Kwasi Kwarteng was forced to start unpicking his mini-budget on the first day of the Conservative Party conference. The day he was due to give a speech, that was pretty humiliating. At the end of the party conference, he went off to Washington to an IMF meeting, and he was recalled at very short notice by Liz Truss to be sacked. And the only person who didn't realise he was going to be sacked when he got on the plane back in Washington was Kwasi Kwarteng himself. He seemed to be very shocked at the idea that he would be sacked. Liz Truss brought in a new emergency chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, who's still there. Jeremy Hunt's first job was to undo most of what Kwasi Kwarteng had announced a few days earlier to reassure the markets. And then in the end, Liz Truss's position became totally unsustainable. Mm-hmm. She'd lost the centrepiece of her economic strategy and she was forced to quit.
So what happens now? Because she was a bit of a star attraction in a sideshow way at the Tory conference a couple of weeks ago. Is there any way she could come back?
I don't think so. I mean, some people around her say that she thinks she possibly could. And, you know, anyone listening to this in Ireland would think that is just completely mad. I mean, she's the most disastrous, short-lived British Prime Minister in history. But there are people around her, including people who were at the Conservative Party conference in Manchester a few days ago, and including the kind of people who will choose the next Tory leader if Rishi Sunak loses the next British general election, which we expect to take place next year. You know, generally, the Conservative Party likes right-wing blonde women who remind them of Margaret Thatcher, to put it bluntly. And so you would never write Liz Truss off. I think it's unlikely. I think if they did decide to go for Liz Truss or anyone like Liz Truss, they would be heading down a rabbit hole, which would probably see the Conservative Party in opposition for a number of years. But that's the kind of thing that parties do when they lose elections. They retreat into their ideological comfort zone and often go down paths which make them ultimately unelectable.
Well, the Liz Truss story might not be over. Just a quick one on these by-elections, Mid-Bedfordshire and Tamworth. These are to decide who replaces Nadine Dorries and Chris Pincher. What's the latest on what might happen in those by-elections, George?
Well, they're really close, I think. I mean, is the answer. We're going to get the results in the middle of the night tonight. Both of them should be rock-solid Conservative seats. Tamworth, a majority of nearly 20,000 for the Tories at the last election. Mid-Bedfordshire, Nadine Dorries' old seat, 25,000 majority. So normally they'd be among the safest in the country. There's no doubt the Tory vote has collapsed in both those seats. The question is whether it's collapsed enough to let the opposition parties win. My hunch is that the Labour Party might just win it in Tamworth. But the other one, Mid-Bedfordshire, is a bit more complicated because you've got the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats, the centrist party, both going hammer and tongs to try to replace the Tories. So there's a possibility there the Tories could come through the middle.
George, thank you very much. Looking back and looking forward, really appreciate it. George Parker, political editor with the Financial Times. We're going to be getting the latest from Cork, where, as you know, and we've been talking about throughout the morning, people in Middleton and in other areas of East Cork are dealing with flooding. We'll find out from Cork County Council what's happening on that in just a moment.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.